Hello, folks. Tyler here. Just a slight heads up. We did face some audio issues with this episode. Basically, it's just how it was recorded at the other end, and it spikes whenever I speak on the audio track. But I've cleaned it up as best I could. I've minimized, maximized audio for the guests there, so the content is still good enough, and we really appreciate if you listen to it and enjoy our little analysis of Dad's bus. It's still great listening. Thank you.
Come to Uncle Mo's for family fun. It's good, 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 good.
Sounds good.
Hello, and welcome to Uncle Mo's Family Feedback, where I go through the dizzying highs, the terrifying lows, and the creamy middles of The Simpsons seasons 1 to 10 through random episode generation. I'm, of course, your host, Tyler McRae. And join with me again. You know, the audition went well, so she's trotting the boards, folks. It's Meg Thomas back again. Ever so good to have you here, Meg. And I managed to get her when she's not being a social butterfly or a jet-setting, wheeling-dealing son of a gun like Ric Flair, but with far less sexual misdemeanors. Meg, it's good to have you back on. How the hell have you been?
Thanks, Tyler. Yeah, I've been good. I'm glad to be back, and I'm glad to be talking about another one of my all-time favourite episodes, because it brings me so much joy.
Yes, it is. Sometimes, and for the sake of Meg, sort of, let's say it's a sort of a parting gift for Meg, even though it's like only moving, what, like an hour on the train. No, this will be the end of Meg. So as a parting gift and a fitting tribute, I've allowed her to kick the random episode generator, and it happens to have stuck on this here episode, folks, there. And this episode being Das Bus from Season 9, Episode 15, directed by Pete Michels, written by David X. Cohen, with the original air date being February the 15th, 1998. And with the couch gab being the family, we're all wee frogs going on the lily pads to watch some TV. Now, as I ask all my guests here, well, I mean, this one clearly stuck with you. Why did this one here stick with you, Meg? Is there any nostalgic memories for this? Again, was this in your run of watching on Channel 4, Sky 1? Did you come into it late? Walk me through it.
You know, I think this is probably another one that I had on videotape. And I don't know exactly why it stuck with me so much. I just loved it. I thought it was hilarious all the way through. Although there were a couple of bits that I had forgotten about. I didn't quite remember. Which was interesting seeing the recap, how, like, you know, some things stay with you a lot more than others. But yeah, it's definitely one of my all-time favourites. I just think it's great.
Right, so just seemingly stuck with you. Would you say it's in your top 5, top 10 in that case? Is it that highly?
Yeah, I think it probably is.
Oh, okay.
And I wish, I don't know, so it came out, what did you say, in 98?
Yeah, early 98.
I mean, I doubt I was watching it when I was 5, but I don't know. I'm trying to think how old I would have been when I first saw it. Probably not even in secondary school. And I just thought it was the most hilarious thing. Like, yeah, perfect. Everything about it is perfect.
Ah, sick. For me, yeah, this is season 9, so it wasn't part of my DVD collection, because I had I had 3 to 8, and then I got 1 and 2 after that. So unless it was on Channel 4, I never watched it. And then I remember watching it on Sky 1 when we had it, 2000 2001. I watched all of season 11 12, and had VHSs of that. So I've got like a kind of, I like to think of myself as a apologist for The Simpsons. So like season 11 and 12, because it's that ingrained into my mind through the VHS collection when I was very wee, they're bent into memory. But for some reason, season 9 has always had a blind spot, but mainly because of memes and because of, you know, oh, the internet, you know, oh, it's this brand new thing in 1998. So that's kind of why this one here stuck with me, Meg.
Yeah, actually, I probably should have looked at what other episodes are in season 9, because I wonder if there's other ones that I really loved that I've just forgotten about. Maybe I should look at a list.
Well, there's a controversial, you know, Principal and the Pauper. We know Principal Skinner is not who he says he is. That synonymous one's in this here season, Meg.
Yes, okay, I remember that one. I don't remember it as much as I remember Das Bus, but interesting. Okay.
And how we kick this one off, it's it's My Friend and Yours. It's only Troy McClure here. Phil Hartman himself playing Moses in this little direct TV movie here, and he's kind of flibbing and flubbing God's message, you know, build an ark, 200 cubits, give or take. No, it's exact. And then, you know, two of every animal, two animals. No, it's two of every animal. Even stink beetles, especially stink beetles. And the family kind of pan out and they're thinking, oh, shall we gamble watching this like 8-hour epic, you know, as was the standard in the 60s for your sandals and swords. Big epics. I mean, hell, I'll bring it up because I don't think I've discussed this with you the last review you did, Meg. Troy McClure, Phil Hartman, I'm assuming you're a big fan of him. I'm assuming you love the character of Troy there. I mean, what do you make of Phil Hartman's talents?
Yeah, oh my gosh. So, love Troy McClure as a character. Was surprised to see him in this episode because that is something I had completely forgotten. And I think watching it back, it's not a bad sort of segment, but it kind of doesn't fit to me that well with the rest of the episode. Like, it's still great and it's still funny, but it's just kind of like, how did we get here compared to what I remember of, you know, what's going to happen later on?
It's just, I've heard other podcasters say, like, it's the inciting incident, the need the family to, you know, move along really quickly there, so we'll have them get tired out from this. Yeah, it's, I agree, it's kind of a non sequitur, but I think having Phil Hartman behind it and vamping away there, it does make it quite entertaining. Do you have a fave McClure moment, or even a Hutz moment, or if so, McClure or Hutz?
Oh geez, you've really put me on the spot.
I'm sorry I gave you this Sophie's Choice so early.
Favourite one, like, out of every episode ever. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, or memorable moments. Can you reel any off that really stick with you?
Memorable? Oh, I might be misremembering this, but what, was he a superhero at some point?
McClure. He was Hercules in the Erotic Adventures of Hercules. And Bart was, Bart was trying to be a Fallout Boy in the Radioactive film. Rainier Wolfcastle was Radioactive Man.
Yes, that's the one.
My eyes, the goggles do nothing. Yeah, that meme.
That's him.
Okay. So not quite Troy.
Is it? Well, any Hutz memories then? Is Lionel Hutz a bit more memorable in his dodgy dealings?
No, not Lionel Hutz, but the, who's that? The doctor. The crazy doctor.
Oh, Dr. Nick.
Dr. Nick. Oh, I love Dr. Nick. Hi, everybody. Hi, Dr. Nick.
The family, the kids try and convince the parents to stay up late there, you know, oh, because it's all about Moses and the flood, and he goes, oh, well, the water's only ankle high. Can we at least stay around and watch midgets drown? Jesus fuck.
Oh, yeah. 1998.
Yeah. It's little people now. But Lisa does the classic reeling off of, oh, come on, surely you can back Mr. Troy McClure from, you know, suddenly Last Supper there and other fine films. Yeah, out of all my fave Troy McClure films, because that's his go-to, Meg, if you're unsure. You go, hi, I'm Troy McClure. You may remember me from such films as Dial M for Murder, what's it, Buck Henderson, Union Bus, like all the 70s schlocky shit, like the actual Doug McClure was doing back in the day, who he's influenced on.
I always thought he was influenced on Arnold Schwarzenegger.
No, that's Rainier Wolfcastle. This Troy McClure was based on Doug McClure, who was this like hokey 50s actor. He had bits and pieces, kind of missed the boat for being properly famous, but you know, B-movies were his bread and butter. And again, he's kind of Shatner-esque in his like delivery and hokiness there. So yeah, that's the kind of genesis of Troy McClure there. That's what Hartman based him on. And the more you know.
Yeah, I just googled him, and you can definitely tell they look exactly.
Oh, absolutely.
The same.
Yeah.
So they end up watching the epic all the way through, absolutely knackered now. And I really like the Lisa line. I feel like this is something my mum would have said as well. Like, oh, those poor badgers are soaked. the most trivial thing has happened in this massive biblical story with high death count there. Everyone's drawn, oh, the poor badgers are soaked, but quiet, God has to say something. And he goes to know, you know, remember, the key to salvation is, and he gets interrupted by Kent Brockman with a little A.M. Springfield story. Oh, you know, it's the opposite. No, he kills two of every animal, right, coming right up there. In true GMTV fashion.
Love that.
Where they find out that, my God, we've stayed up the whole night. Yeah, come on, kids, let's get you to school quick. And this is where, you know, we get the proper meat of the story kicking off here, folks. It's the Model UN. So the kids are in their little humanities lesson here. And I've said it before in our last recording there, with our good friend Hazel, actually, funnily enough. Yeah, I love when characters in films, TV, animation get into alternate attire. Meg, what do you make of the little UN setup that these young Springfieldians have? And who's your fave?
I love it. I love it so much. I really like the twins as Trinidad and Tobago. I thought that was really funny. I also like having... I mean, Bart looks fantastic in his costume. They all look great. It is... Yeah, it's really nice to see them all in a slightly different attire. You know, it's cool. It's a nice different perspective change.
It is. So we've got all sorts there. Skinner's saying that, you know, the Model UN trips to capital cities tomorrow, and we've got to bone up, and bone we will. And he uses that quite a few times and all. So he goes around to each kid and wants them to show them what they've done, their research on each country. He kicks off with, and I mean, I'll cue it in here as well. He kicks off with Martin. It's maybe my favourite bit of this, and we're going right early, folks.
Finland, let's see that native dance. Smile more. Work that pelvis. No, too much smile. Sit down.
Because he's in his little cute furry winter gear for Finland, and he's going, how about that native dance? And he's, you know, and just the comments Skinner makes, you know, smile, work that pelvis. Oh, it's too much. Oh, sit down. Like, mild disappointment at the end there. Like, shows why I haven't been in a relationship for many years, folks. I've had those same comments throughout, you know, oh, smile more, work that pelvis. Oh, forget it, sit down.
It's the work that pelvis. It gets me every time. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, boy can move them hips. And we get Milhouse as well in, you know, Polish get-upper as well, but I've never seen this kind of vintage gear. They had to do some Googling, and this is like really old school European garb here from Poland. Have you ever come across this kind of vintage gear in your travels, Meg?
Do you know what? I haven't, but I am going to Poland this weekend, so maybe I'll keep an eye out for.
Oh, yes. No, please do. Yeah, if you can get in touch with me as well, I'll drop little links when this episode drops here and all, because I need more context into Milhouse's beautiful outfit here, as well as the very drab, I think this is bulks as well, like kids would do for research, you know. Well, we sent a rocket to the moon at night, and we got a submarine with screen doors, like just absolutely nothing, but, you know, creme de la creme. We come to Bart here in his best Colonel Gaddafi get-up. Yes, because he is Libya now. Yes, he's in full Gaddafi here, folks, because he is Libya. He even starts off with, yes, I've got it, you American pig. Oh, that's a nice touch there. And Meg, you're in the final year of higher education there. You've written many essays. You've done many presentations here. Could you please tell us what happens with Bart, and how would you grade his attempts at research and presentation here?
So this is one of those things that kind of stuck in my memory, was the old, I can't remember the exact wording, but like, or as the, Indians call it maize. Like, so whenever I think of corn, I just have that phrase in my head. But I had completely forgotten that he was Libya. Like, and it's,
oh, yeah.
I mean, I give him, it's Bart Simpson, I give him a 10 out of 10. But, yeah, I'm not sure how relevant corn is to Libya. Maybe I need to Google it a bit more.
Oh, no, well, he's got blank sheets as well, like, I tell you what, A for absolute, and I love shithousery in life, football, everything. I appreciate the complete total bollocks that he's just got blank bits of paper in it. Right, I'll just lie out my arse. Because he sounds convincing enough. Like, I was definitely doing this at, say, age 12, 13, at the start of high school, you know. Oh, Will Smith was in many films. He was in Men in Black. Men in Black is about aliens. Aliens are scary. In conclusion, Will Smith is a great actor at the end. You know, stuff like that. Like, it's just nothing. Nothing of substance there. But if you sound convincing, Meg, that's half the battle.
I know. I absolutely could not have done anywhere near as good were I in the same position.
I was going to say, have you got any like howlers or any kind of, oh, you pulled this out of your ass when it comes to, you know, your conferences, your uni work here? Or are you very much the, no, I'm well prepared and, you know, you've got a sore back from carrying the group for the team presentation?
I actually really like making presentations, so I tend to be pretty well prepared. Although the first conference that I presented at as part of my PhD, it tanked. Like, oh my, I don't know what happened. I think I let the nerves get to me, and it was, I had sort of over planned it. So I planned to make these jokes, but because I was so worried about them, they didn't land, and it was just,
oh no,
absolutely mortifying. Like, I wanted to jump straight out of the window.
That sounds very US office. Oh, like, you plan gags and that. You didn't do the spin as well, did you?
No, I didn't. but it was, yeah, no, it was really awful. So I think since that I've discovered that humour's maybe not my strength. You know, I'm not getting a PhD in comedy, right? So we leave that behind. We be a bit more professional, and touch wood, since then they've gone okay, I guess.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the jokes you were doing with probably puns, and probably not like what I would have done or my dad would have been. Like, it's great to be here in Dublin for this conference. Speaking of Dublin, you know, Englishman and Irishman and a blind priest walking up a bar. Like, no, it's not. I think you would have done all right, if I'm completely honest. A lot better than I would have.
Yeah, they definitely were puns. I can't quite remember. I wanted it, I don't know, in my head it was going to be like kind of interactive, and I was going to be asking questions to the audience, and I just got super nervous and completely forgot, and everyone was completely disinterested, and it just bombed. Oh my gosh, thinking about it now gives me anxiety, because I'm like, that was terrible. Hopefully never again.
The kids end up fighting and bickering all from Nelson as Japan giving Mexico a hard time, twisting him with his chopsticks up there. Of course, like a good authoritarian, Principal Skinner does fuck all, because, hey, I'm afraid he's got diplomatic immunity, like Lethal Weapon 2. So everyone bickers, starts fighting there. And he does, and I knew this was a reference, I knew I'd seen this in like archive footage somewhere. Skinner starts slamming his shoe on the table. This actually happened in the UN, don't you know, Meg?
Did it really?
Yes, it was a Soviet, it was in the 60s, I think 1960 they had a summit, and it was a Soviet leader at the time, I think it was Khrushchev, it wouldn't have been Gorbachev. Yeah, it was Khrushchev, and he got really frustrated and whacked his shoe out and banged it on the table to get everyone's attention. So yeah, I think it's been memed in a load of, like, you know, Saturday Night Live in the 80s and the like,
yeah.
Parodied and the like. But yeah, so that's where it came from. So there is a UN link there. So I thought it was. It's a, yeah, hell of a smart joke.
Again, it's not the smartest joke, but one of the best bits, and you'll love it, is to burst through all of this, who have we got? It's in his little Mountie uniform. It's only bloody Ralph Wiggum. Trying to do a rendition of the national anthem.
Oh, he's just so gorgeous. I love Ralph.
Order, order. Do you kids want to be like the real UN? Or do you just want to squabble and waste time?
He is. I love him so much. And again, behind the scenes, folks, I managed to get dungarees for the first time for my birthday, try something different out fashion-wise. I thought, oh, I'll find some pins, cool Simpsons pins. I have got one of this exact scene of Wee Ralph standing up in his Canuck uniform here, there. And I think you've seen it in person now, haven't you?
If I have, I didn't notice it. I feel like it's something I don't remember.
Yeah, it's great condition as well. It's no shite. It's proper an animal and everything. But I thought, oh yeah, you know, because I've got Rat Boy, I've got Homer and a Moo Moo, and then I've got this. And funnily enough, I think this is the most obscure because people just think, oh, it's just custom like Etsy stuff. No, this actually happened in an episode. Haha, don't you know? Let me tell you more. Yeah, he's fantastic. He might be my MVP of this episode, Meg.
Yeah.
And I'll just assume he is for you as well.
I think you might be right.
And cap it all off, Skinner's got the line of, do you kids want to act like the UN or do you just want to squabble and waste time? So the kids are now occupying the bus up there as everyone says goodbye to them there, and Wiggum with some good advice as well. Good luck, Ralphie. Don't pick your nose. If it starts bleeding, you're picking it too much. Or not enough.
Right.
Gotta hedge them bets.
That's another one of those quotes that just... I don't know why. I don't know why I find these things so funny, but I think it's probably the delivery. Like, the timing's just so good.
Yeah, thankfully Otto's in hand, so it's going to be fine, because he's got the biggest natural resource in the world, you know, the school bus. Fuck the kids, it's the school bus that Springfield Elementary care for. And they're off as we cut back to Evergreen Terrace, and as Homer goes through his bills with many notices there, jury duty, mortgages, he notices a little envelope for Flancrest Enterprises. As Flanders is collecting his mail as well, oh, sorry neighbour, that's for me, I run a little side business there, and Homer can't believe it, but no, he sells religious hook rugs online, and making some good scratch too, Meg.
Yeah, apparently so, Ned Flanders with the side hustle.
Flancrest Enterprises?
Oops, that's for me. Flancrest Enterprises is my home business.
You liar! You don't have a home business. Why would you make up a lie like that?
No, it's true. Maude and I sell religious hook rugs over the internet.
Internet, eh?
Yes, indeedy. Making some good scratch, too.
Scratch, eh?
Yep.
Maude, eh?
He is there, and I do like the ongoing, oh, you know, scratch, eh? You know, yep, Maude, eh?
That's another bit that I'd completely forgotten about. it's perfect. Like, it is perfect.
The little saucy delivery on it as well, and I've joked about this with our friend Hazel as well, because she has many cool friends and many good-looking mates as well. And again, they're all in happy partnerships and marriages and all that there. But I think I've said it a few times to her, like, oh, you know, you're coming over to this barbecue. Yeah, great. Cheers for the invite, Hazel. Yeah. Oh, you know, we'll call her Maud. I was going to say a real name there.
We'll call her Maud as well.
Oh, you know, Maud's coming over. You know what? Lovely Maud. Oh, Maud, eh? You know, I always like Maud. She's a nice woman. So I've very much resonated with Homer in this scene there with a little raised eyebrow. It's fantastic, Meg. I've probably said too much and buried myself, but for the sake of content, there you go. You know what I'm like.
Oh, jeez.
Well, with that being said, as Homer sets up his, you know, internet business quote marks there, have you ever had any kind of side hustles there? You're an industrious lady yourself there.
Oh, not really. I mean, I think I'm just... half of my time is spent working, and the other half is spent, like, worrying about work, so I don't have time for, like, anything else. I would like to get a side hustle, though. I did try to, I tried to get some remote work when I lived in Sweden as a, basically transcribing, medical records.
Okay.
Yeah, so doctors would, like, have their appointment, record it, and then I would transcribe it. But apparently I couldn't type fast enough, which is so embarrassing.
Oh, no. You went up to your 60, 100 words a minute.
Oh, no, I think it was like 30 or something atrocious. So yeah, they wouldn't employ her. It's just really sad. I have to say, after starting and doing the PhD for 3 years, I type way faster than I did back then. So maybe I could get it now. But I'm hoping that I won't need a side hustle once the PhD pays off. But I guess we'll see.
We get the kids back on the bus. There is we think the kids are singing typical school songs and that. But Otto just winds this tape. And he's listening to songs that enrage bus drivers. Because he's a sadist, apparently. Oh, I don't know why I bought this stupid tape. And he throws out the window. Solid gag. But we get to... I'm assuming... Preamble, folks. This is easily Meg's best scene. Because it involves her favourite sweet little boy. Meg, walk us through what happens. How do the kids alleviate the boredom?
Okay, so I think Bart is the instigator. And he proposes a race with items of fruit that the kids have got, and the winner gets Martin's lunch money, I believe.
What?
Yeah, which Martin wasn't aware of. So we've basically got Bart and Nelson at the back of the bus. Bart, I think, rolls an apple. And then Nelson rolls an orange. So they're having this race, and then it just cuts to Ralph. He just throws a banana on the floor, and he goes, "Go banana!" And it's just the cutest little Ralph moment. Like, I love it so much.
Hey, Simpson, race ya!
First one to the front of the bus gets Martin's lunch money.
What?
Go apple!
Go orange! Go banana!
I like the fact how quickly he's got instant regret on his face as well, because he hits the go banana and he's just like, oh, shit. Like, such a sad little face on him as well.
I know, and it lingers on that face for, like, just the right amount of time that you notice it. You're like, oh, my sweet angel, poor thing.
Well, it's a seemingly hot race. I mean, hell, all the kids are shouting for it. They've got favourites there, but who comes along and seemingly, definitely ruins it? Milhouse there with a big old grapefruit. Go, grapefruit, as he bowls it down the bus with such power and vigour. But it gets trapped under the brake, as Otto tries to brake coming up to a slow bridge there, and he panics, so he does it a bit more, and then the citric acid shoots into his eyes, he can't see, and then, like, real-life optics, Megs, this is fucking horrible and scary, like, grown man with a bus full of kids veering across the road, he's blind, and then, like, a horror of horrors, bursts off the dam, with the kids hurtling towards the ocean, and that's how we end the first act. I needed to be my eyes and ears, kids. Like, fucking hell, this is a lot, Meg.
It is a lot. I also, another tangential story, but this episode helped me win. I was at a hen party, we were playing Taskmaster, and there was this challenge where they gave us, like, there's a whole bunch of different things, like a load of fruit, and we had to, I think, if I remember correctly, it was like, roll this thing the furthest, right? And there was a grapefruit there, and I chose grapefruit because I remembered this episode, and I was like, well, grapefruit beat an orange in The Simpsons, so it must be
nice.
You'd done your research before, I love that.
Yeah, I did actually win, so thank
you. Oh, get in, Meg. Brilliant. What did you win?
Oh, nothing, but I got the moral victory.
Pride, you got pride. We come back to the second act now, where the kids have hurtled towards the ocean. They splash in, and then thankfully they come up to air, because that's a big, long, pregnant pause there. Like, really to add to the drama there. Thankfully the bus pops up, and then a great score comes in as the kids are busy throwing up, panicking and that. But, oh, Ralph's still determined, isn't he?
I just love Ralph. Oh, he's gorgeous.
Yeah, he's on his hands and knees. Like, the banana's not even moving. Like, it's willing its way, God bless him. Just go, banana! As, like, Wendell's almost sick on him there, pulling a big sicky face. Oh, it's brilliant. He's so stupid. I love him. But Otto, and I will say fair play, like, they don't really treat him as a coward, but, like, what else can you do with these kids? He's trying to swim for help there. And then, like, just the tide takes him, because obviously, you know, that's real life there. Zeppelin rules, as he lets out his possible last cry. Brilliant. as the kids are, well, seemingly left to die. Like, again, like, but that's the thing. Like, I now look at it as a 28-year-old and just think, this is really harrowing. Like, because I just think of, like, real-life optics. But, like, as a kid, I just thought, oh, wow, that's, like, that's kind of, like, that's it, perilous. That's what they stick on the, like, when they're grading films. This has got mild peril for you, for Universal. I'd say, oh, this is perilous as a kid, but, like, you know, the kids escape and that, it's fine. But, like, real life, this is a national headline. Like, the kids are screwed. I'm just sorry to make it a downer, folks, and listening into this, but I just keep thinking, like, my God, this is just awful.
Do you know what, though? Even now, I think I have the reaction that they have initially in this episode, which is just, well, the Bart has, which is just, you know, this is going to be so cool. And I've always thought, like, if I was stranded on an island, it would be amazing, and I would have a monkey butler, and everything would just be great. And I'd eat the chewy, chewy cocoa beans, and it would be fantastic.
Yes, well, that's what happens. Thankfully, the kids manage to escape the bus as it sinks like the Titanic. They crawl up on a beach. They're licking their wounds and crying. They're blaming each other there because Lisa started the UN club, but Martin seconded the notion, so it's all his fault. And Nelson's spot on here. We all know this is Milhouse's fault, and he's bang on here. And I'll say this now as we get examples coming up, well, from now, but Milhouse is a Weasley shit in this episode. There's nothing likeable about him. And I assume they were kind of going there, but I don't know from just what they did. I think they did it too many times where they show him to be, you know, a coward, a little snivelling lion shit there. But just because he doesn't help himself, and he's actually the worst in this episode, Meg, there. I mean, what did you make him? I guess we'll talk about it all here, but what did you make of Milhouse and his eventual antics here? I guess, what do you think of him as a general character?
So, generally, I like Milhouse. Thrillhouse, as I like to call him. But he definitely does have that aspect of, like, the character that you love to hate, right? Because sometimes it's just like, God damn it, Milhouse. And I think this episode is a good example of one of those times where it's just like, he's the worst. He's the absolute worst.
I was going to say, as a woman who's had to deal with horrible straight men in her life, like, Milhouse has got a lot of the early signs of, like, incel culture. And there's been, like, genuine theses put on him about that and just how he portrays himself, like, trying to be, you know, a friend just so he can try and get with Lisa and all that. And, you know, the flash-forward episodes, he's just this horrible, you know, toxic masculinity, big steroided man there. So I'm surprised he's got, like, I'm surprised he's one, like, someone you like, Meg.
I mean, to be fair, I did not know that about Milhouse.
Oh, no. Oh, no, really? Oh, I'm sorry to take the shine off him.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't massively surprise me. I'm not saying he's, like, one of my favourite characters by any means. But I think, I mean, I'm trying to think at what point I kind of stopped watching The Simpsons. I know there's, I certainly haven't seen any of the newer seasons, so I'm wondering if this is all information that I kind of just never got to.
Well, with that as well, and I don't like it just because of, like, who I see as Miles's character, but in a lot of the, like, modern flash forwards, he is with Lisa. He got what he wanted, what he pined over, and I'm not a fan of that myself there. But let me know in the comments, folks, and on our Twitter and Facebook there, what you think of the complicated world of Milhouse there.
But fear not, Bart is, you know, assumed de facto leader of the island now, saying, I'm glad we're stranded there, you know, this is the best thing that's happened to us there. We can be like the Swiss Family Robinson, but with more cursing. We're going to live like damn hell-ass kings. And we get a lovely little dream sequence, don't we? Like, what their idealised Family Robinson life's going to be on this island.
Yeah, and it looks perfect. It looks like somewhere that I want to live.
It looks like, it reminded me of, like, I'm a big fan of archive footage and old ads and that. It looks like peak late 80s, early 90s, like, hey kids, come to Wet n Wild this summer, and, like, you know, like, roller coaster adverts. Like, just how it's shot there with the slide that, and then you've got the, you know, wooden cart that Sherry and Terry are wheeling out there. It's really idyllic, that.
Yeah, it's definitely showcasing that kind of dream scenario, right, you know, oh, there's no parents around, we can swear, we can do whatever we want, we can, you know, again with the monkey butlers, but that's one of my favourite aspects. So.
Oh, sorry, monkey butlers, your favourite aspect, thank you. You've led me into this, Meg, actually with no needling, folks, I swear. But we get as part of this dream sequence, who serves Nelson a little mock pina colada. It's only a little monkey fella. Yes, it's, we haven't done this for a while, but it's time for a nice little Carl Pilkington segue. My word, I've did it loads with when Cal was on here, Meg. The Ricky Gervais Show, Mr. Carl Pilkington. How much of a fan are you? Do you know what I'm on about? Do you know anything of Monkey News?
I actually don't, and I'm really sorry.
Oh, great. Okay, that's good. I get to fill you in then. Okay. Fantastic.
Right. Obviously, you're aware of the wonderful man that is Carl Pilkington.
Yes, I am.
Yes. Well, there was a wonderful little animated series called The Ricky Gervais Show, where they based it on the early podcast from like 2005 to 2007, and they just animated the audio, and it was a success for HBO. Channel 4 ended up getting it as well, good viewing figures and the like, and it's just been like a big part of my life as like a big comedy fan, because it just works really well. And one of the best things he ever did was Monkey News. Like, for some reason, Carl's obsessed with monkeys. And as a little ode to this podcast and a guilty pleasure, I like to try and bring up when there's a monkey on screen, I'll do a little Carl quote, or I'll insert some Carl audio here. So it'll just be a random one that I liked. But here you go, listener. Here's a bit of audio for you here.
So they get in the car. They're on the way to the boat and pull over at a petrol station.
Uh-huh.
And just before filling it up, he opens up the boot and he goes, "Yeah, all right." And then it's like, "Yeah, it's fine."
So
he leaves the boot open so he can breathe and get a bit of fresh air whilst he's filling up. Goes in to pay the money.
Yep.
Pays the money. Goes, "I'm just paying for the
right." This monkey is not going to drive away in that car, or we're never doing this feature again.
Carl, what happens? What's number 86 up to?
So 86. So
that's the ending, isn't it? That's the story.
Come on, let
right,
finish the story.
Not be, it better
brilliant,
not
brilliant,
be.
Brilliant, brilliant. You're gonna love it. Right, so he's in the petrol station, and he's going, "Right, I'll pay for pump 4. And the fella says, "What are you talking about?
Pump four? Isn't that a monkey?" No. Sometimes I use numbers for monkeys. Sometimes I use pump 4.
Sure.
Yeah, so he says, "What are you talking about? There's no car at pump 4."
Right.
Keep going.
Sticks his head out of the door. Yeah. The monkey's given it some. Went over to Spain on its own.
I don't know what to do.
Hang on, let's just get a couple of the facts right here.
What do you mean, couple of the facts? Right, there are no facts.
So it number 86 drove to Spain.
You are honestly, Carl. You must know.
It was an automatic.
Right, Carl. How did he know that is shit. There is no way a monkey.
That's the thing with his
feature.
He gets
stopped at customs.
It's mental.
But. Oh, I have to link you. Like, I know people... I'm not a fan of Ricky Gervais anymore. I appreciate what he's done, but for his views on, you know, minority of people and all that, I don't fuck with him anymore. But by all means, Meg, I really suggest watching it. If you've got any kind of downtime, I'll give you some links. Please, everyone, go and watch it. But Meg, thank you for listening to my TED Talk. Thank you for appeasing me. Seemingly, it's going to be an ideal society then, with many monkey butlers, but how many will there be? Oh, well, one at first, but he'll teach others. Like, proper middle management, that. Just leave one to do the rest of the work.
It's idyllic.
We're back to Evergreen Terrace now, and Homer's trying to come up with a name for his new internet company there. Flanquette Enterprises is already taken there, but you need something cutting-edge, Meg. Cutco, Interslice. I like Interslice. I think that really sticks out, but could you come up with a... Like, let's say you've got the brand of Meg, or, I don't know, like, what's a cool hobby you like there, Meg, if you're going to go for your side hustle? What kind of, or do your own podcast, what kind of name could you come up with that sells Meg's thing, Meg the brand? I know this sounds very apprentice-y, what I'm doing there, but, any ideas?
Jesus, you're really putting me on the spot today.
I'm really sorry. I'm thinking of these cool concepts. We can go
here with the conversation, but yeah. Or I'll tell you what. I'll ask you this: how important is it to get an effective name, or you know, get the branding right there. I'm sure you've kind of done it in your line of work there or throughout your academic history and the like there. How important is it, you know, getting an image, getting the brand right?
I think it's pretty important. I've also been hearing a lot at the moment about this kind of, what is it, like self-brand? I don't know. I use LinkedIn a lot and there's some absolute fucking lunatics on LinkedIn. And there's this idea of like your own brand, like your self-brand. So what kind of person are you 24/7? And you have to, as soon as someone meets you, they've got to make sure they get the brand. And it's just a bit like...
right, I get you.
Really? Like, I get it at work. Like, maybe there is kind of a brand I kind of sell myself as, I guess. Like, I'm always friendly, I'm, you know, helpful, that kind of person, I guess. But is that not just what everyone strives for? Like, I don't know if I buy into this theory of, like, having a personal brand, but I don't know, I'm not a millionaire. Maybe that's what's missing.
Yeah, I feel like that should just be the bare standard for anyone. Oh, I think I get it as well. So it's like those insufferable types you see on Tinder that are like, oh, 6'5", jacked, no baby mama drama and all that. I get you.
I think it's like, it's basically every person that's ever been on The Apprentice and how insufferable they are and like, oh, I'm going to present myself to be this big alpha male and that's my brand and I'm going to do mixed martial arts because that's my brand and I go to the gym and that's my brand. And
it's just like, I get you there.
Have a day off, you know what I mean?
What do I bring to the table? I am the table. I get you. I get the little vox pops. Yeah, bingo.
Ugh, gross.
Marge actually comes up with it's kind of wordy, but a banger. Compute Global Hyper MegaNet. Don't know about that. But straight away, Homer just steals it then. How my director, Carl, big annoyed face, and it's Patty. Like, I can imagine she just said, hey, bonehead, I want Marge. Like, yeah, just straight away. Love that little gag to get into the next scene there. Perfect.
I also love that Homer kind of insinuates that he doesn't like Marge's idea and then just goes with it. I think it's a great name. I think it's very catchy. Maybe a bit on the long side, but Compia Global Hyper MegaNet. I would be very surprised if someone hasn't taken that and tried to, you know, start a company with it.
I'm sure there has. I know there's a Simpsons meme page on Facebook that goes by the same name. That's why I know it as. But I'm sure someone on Etsy's called their stall that or something like that. I tell you what, I'm quite lucky. I lucked out with Uncle Mo's Family Feedback for a Simpsons podcast name there, because, you know, you've got the wonderful lads that put it in H, who've rebranded to do, like, just film in general now for their podcast, and you've got, like, Everything's Coming Up, and, you know, kind of memey ones, but I think, oh, you know, it works shorthand, like, oh, you know, Uncle Mo's, you know, oh, did you listen to that Uncle Mo's and everything, and I could, you know, if I meet people, you know, oh, you know, I'm Uncle Mo himself, ha ha ha, and all that, so I kind of lucked out with that one, really, so I was quite fortunate with it, and, It's become what it is today. I was going to say the big thing it is today, but, you know, got to humble yourself. Soon enough, folks. Soon enough.
Oh, my God. So I have just I've just done a Google search for Compute Global Hyper MegaNet. And there was one registered in Swansea in Wales. But unfortunately,
no way.
It dissolved in 2017. Which is really sad.
I was going to say, is any of your cousins behind that?
I'm from the north, mate. Sorry, I don't associate with those people in Swansea.
So the kids went out for a food hunt, but you know, if you come back, and then pitifully they just show berries. And as you said, Meg, what happened to the mangoes, the pineapples, and the chewy chewy cocoa beans? Well, there's only these purple berries that ooze, and they don't even look that good. But this hasn't stopped Ralph, has it, Meg?
Little Ralphie coming through with like the best quotes ever again. This is another one that I say all the time.
I eated the purple berries. How? Oh.
How are they, Ralph? Good?
They taste like burning.
Okay, the food hunt's a crapper, and so's the shelter there. Maybe Otto had the right idea of swimming away and trying to get help there, but Otto, like, is absolutely knackered. This is it. At least I'm going to leave a beautiful corpse. And seemingly is going to die, but then gets saved when he gets caught up in a big fishnet onto a Chinese fishing boat. Oh, thank the good dude, I'm saved. Good to see you, dudes. And then in the native accent as well, we need another slave. Shall we have him? You can never have too many, gutting slaves. I think I'm going to like it here. Nice little tie-up on that. It's not the best, but it's such a cute little bow to end the little Otto saga here. I quite like this.
Well, I'm done for. At least I leave a beautiful corpse. Whoa! Oh, thank the good dude, I'm saved. And we can go back for the kids, too. I think I'm gonna like it on this boat.
The kids are looking forlorn there, but Milhouse comes in forewarning of a monster there, and everyone hides. But there's no monster around. Milhouse just made it up. And this is where we get parallels with everyone's favourite, English literature exam book, everyone's favourite GCSE book, To Kill a Mockingbird. No, not that, folks. Only joking. It's Lord of the Flies. Now, do you know much of Lord of the Flies? Was this your exam book per se, Meg? What do you know about it?
It was not my exam book, and I did not know that this episode was kind of loosely based on Lord of the Flies at all. Until earlier on today, when I was doing a bit of research.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, so I've never read it. Basically, all I know about Lord of the Flies is what I learned from this episode of The Simpsons.
Oh, right, okay. Well, again, I've not watched the film, but there's two films. The original's in the 60s, and it's a bunch of British kids. Then the Americans remade it in 91. But essentially, kids are stranded on an island. They form their own society. It's going well. And then some of the kids, the bad ones, kind of dispute this. And then because there's no adults or authoritarian present, half of them turn into savages and half of them are trying to keep the peace. And I won't spoil it, but it leads to, certain consequences, shall we say, at the end. And it's a really good ending as well. And the British film, it's done really well as what all kids will do, especially little boys will do without authority figures. It's really harrowing. So it's well worth a read, and the black and white film's well worth a watch, folks. I'll say that. But with a lot of the references here as well, Milhouse using his glasses to start the fire, that's a direct lift as they take Piggy's glasses and scratch it so they can get Flint there. So seemingly, maybe they can survive this island there, but they're all sitting around starving, and I'm so hungry I could eat Arby's. Oh my god, no way! What would the British equivalent be? Because Arby's is like a burger or like a big roast beef sandwich place, if I remember correctly from the wonderful Bill Oakley and his Instagram reviews. What would be the British equivalent here? I don't know. What would it be, Meg?
I don't know. So I've had an Arby's and I quite liked it. But
oh, you have? Walk me through. Did you have the roast beef or what's it like when you go in?
So I didn't go in. I went to a drive-thru. I can't remember where I was going. I had some weird, ginormous beef thing and I had some really nice, really nice fries. I don't remember it super well. It wasn't a standout meal that I had, but it wasn't terrible. I don't know what the British version would be,
Other than, Witherspoon's food and all that, but I feel like that's too easy. I'm trying to think of, fast food chain.
Maybe the old, oh my god, what were they called?
What, Little Chef?
Little Chef.
Have E. coli with your eggs, sir. Oh my god, my dad's got some horror stories when he used to be up and down, the M25 there with his work. Yeah, good God. That's there you go. I'm so hungry I could eat it. Little Chef, good God. But the kids realise they have a whole cooler full of snacks on the bus. So Bart takes it upon himself with with Milhouse and Hale, hey, I need that to live. Like, again, real life optics, like, there's no chance that you works as kind of a faux scuba diving gear, but it works for Bart. So we see him scuba dive down there as we see all sorts of nasties that are in the bus, including a hammerhead shark that was animated in there. So madness. But Bart ends up retrieving the case, doesn't he?
He does. And also, I would just like to say that I have fully planned in my head that if I was ever in a situation where I was going to be underwater and it was, you know, kind of life or death, I would grab Brody's inhaler because I just assumed it works. I don't know. Mate, what? Yeah, okay. Why am I doing a PhD?
So Bart, like the Messiah, comes through. Does anyone like food? And all the kids, like pigs around poo, just go straight in. Gobs are plenty, inhaling everything there. But Lisa, being the rational, sensible one of the group, saying, stop, stop. You want this food done by tonight? No, you've got to ration it now. And then Nelson comes out with some great lines here, just bucking authority there. But yeah, the kids have got to, you know, have discipline there. They've got to live like a proper society there with the Duchess of Dork in charge.
Duchess of Dork.
Because let's not forget what they learnt at the UN club there, Meg. And then we get Martin doing the little dance again, don't we?
Such a good dance.
The kids wake up to the next day. They're ready for more food there. But then when they go to open the case, shock horror, it's been wiped clean there. But where did all the food go, Meg?
Well, unfortunately, all signs are pointing to Milhouse.
Yes, he's got multiple smoking guns or empty crisp packets around him, shall we say. And everyone starts giving out about him. He swears he didn't do it, but his breath reeks of nacho cheese crisps there. So they all go to seemingly rip him apart as we end that second act. Yep, this is another point. He has technically eaten the food there, folks. We do get an admission of guilt, even though it is just one. You know, the old tip of the iceberg mentality. If I admit to the small crime, people forget the big crime and all that, Meg. There, it's just, yeah, down in my estimations, Meg.
So they're all backing around him now, but Milhouse has gotten out. You know, you wouldn't hurt me because I've got the glasses, but. Yeah, you can just easily take him off his head as he cowers and backs away from Nelson as they go to rough him up and get the food back, where Lisa intervenes and says, no, he needs a due process. This is going to a fair trial. And I love the fact the kids are just, like, again, because of Guerrilla Mission and actually what happens in Lord of the Flies, no, it would just turn to savagery and beatings, but no, the kids are just willing to go along with it and disappointed, going,
going itchy and scratchy land or something, and then Nelson with society blows. He just kind of dumps Milhouse down here.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
We're back home in Springfield now, and what a sight as well. We get comic book guy prepping himself. I'll just say,
yeah.
He's downloading some material. Captain Janeway from Star Trek. Kate Mulgrove there, who's also Red in Orange is the New Black, I know more of. I know we've got a couple of big Star Trek fans out there. So yeah, this is Captain Janeway, you know, the final brassiere, finally.
As he tries, great line, isn't it?
Fantastic.
As he tries to download it, he gets a bloody annoying pop-up with the Internet King. Homer has set up his own business, and seemingly it's some faux broadband business, it seems, Meg.
Yeah, I couldn't quite figure out what it was, but I feel like Homer probably doesn't know what it is either. So, although he did manage to get some ads out, which, fair play.
Yeah, he's got proper pop-ups and everything going from there. Now, you're of a similar age to me. What is your trial and tribulations with dial-up internet? And I'm assuming you didn't download the similar things that Comic Book Guy downloaded.
I did not, but I don't know, I think this kind of shows how perhaps early into like the internet we were at the time that Comic Book Guy actually clicked on a pop-up. It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, there you go.
So Comic Book Guy, you know, maybe he can provide faster nudity, the Internet King. So he comes into the Simpsons household. I like how Homer's just so brazen and confident with this, despite not knowing what the fuck's going on. Just, welcome to the internet, how may I help you? Just, brilliant. I've got this up on the subtitles now, so I'll try and read out what comic book guy said. Yes, I'm interested in upgrading to a 2.8 kilobaud kinetic line to 1.5 mega router. Will this give me an Ethernet token ring? Is it compatible with that, with my line configuration? And there's a big old pause with an unimpressed comic book guy, and I love Homer's expressions throughout the series, but I love it when he's got no idea what's going on. Just a big vacant stare. I really resonate with that. Just a big long pause, and then, can I have some money now?
Oh, that's how I wish jobs worked.
I was going to say, you're a PhD student. I'm sure there's many times where you've had to do your transcribing or extra tutoring and all that, and you've dealt with some fuckery or something, and you've just sat there and you just thought, can I leave now? Like, this has got to run true with you, Meg.
Oh my god, every single day. Every day.
It really isn't that bad.
Yeah, but usually I think especially because I went into computer science not being a computer scientist, not having done any computer science, so the first year and a half of my PhD just felt like that scene on repeat, like people saying stuff to me and me just being like, can I just have some money?
So we've now got the Kangaroo Court. We've got, you know, Milhouse Van Outen versus the people, as it were, in a little bamboo cage here. What do you make of the setup there? We have a beaten Milhouse. It's gone from, yeah, one GCSE book. We've gone from bloody Lord of the Flies to Kill a Mockingbird here. We've got a courtroom scene. What do you make of the scene direction here and the animation here, Meg? I think it's great because now you get to see the wear and tear on the kids, Milhouse in the little cage. Even though, again, could freely escape, he's willing to play along.
Yeah, I love how it's obvious that things are starting to kind of dissolve. People are getting a bit rough. It's getting a little bit feral. But I don't know. If I was in their position, I probably would have wanted to put Milhouse in a cage as well. So I totally get it.
Yeah, I like the fact Bart's just, you know, talking in the cage. And the fact that, like, it's not a real court, but the kids are playing along like it's a high budget TV court drama, as Lisa goes, well, I'm calling to the stand the one and only witness, Milhouse Van Outen, and everyone goes, oh, like it's a surprise witness ready to swing the jury. It's brilliant.
Yeah, I love the drama.
So she asks Milhouse, did you steal the food? And he says, absolutely no way. Well, could anyone else have taken it? Oh, well, I guess you could have. No, I'm defending you here. Come on. Like, there's another tick for Milhouse. So, oh, sorry, but you know, it's just, it was either you or the monster, the fabled monster there. We will not have monster talk or debate of the existence of monsters here. And again, the kids go, aww, like, is anything gonna kick off? This is boring. And then Lisa, doing her best Harvey Birdman, Phoenix Wright, asks, well, there's only one definitive question. Did anyone else see anyone steal the food? And of course, no one else did. So with that, she rests her case there. That's her, you know, if the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit. That's her Johnny Cochran moment there. And we have Nelson stand up. Here's the prosecution. And he thinks. And he ponders Meg. And he thinks some more. He moves around. Is this his Gregory Peck moment? Is he going to send Milhouse down as the no good piece of shit? What does he do, Meg?
I mean, he's clearly building up to something big. And I think in, should we say, classical Nelson fashion?
Oh, it's very typical Nelson fashion, you're right.
Yeah, punch straight to the gut. Or the crap factory.
Yes, there we go. He takes multiple shots of the crap factory. Take that, you no good liar. And he just still laying into him as Lisa, objection, he's not asking any questions. And Bart, like, as an audience substitute, I'm going to let this go. And then just carries, prosecution rests. Like, killer line. What a way to end this as well. But we get to judge, jury, and executioner in Bart. Well, my final verdict, it seems Milhouse did eat the food, but as we can't really tell if he did, there's no disputable evidence. I declare him not guilty. Smacks his little rock, his little gavel. Milhouse is free from the bamboo cage, but much like the OJ trial, people are not happy with this verdict, Meg. And chaos starts to ensue, does it not?
It does, and pretty quickly as well.
Yeah, like a real... And again, I like the little escalation here. A nasty shot of, you know, sucks to the law, and Nelson chucks a rock at Milhouse's glasses. And that's, and again, Meg, that's another lift straight from Lord of the Flies, like the really disturbing violence, like bang, just really hits you in the face, like Milhouse with the rock here, and Lisa goes to protect Milhouse. Help me, Bart. I don't know, I'm kind of really annoyed with that verdict here, like, he's with the people eventually, but when Nelson goes for Lisa, don't you touch my sister, so yeah, Milhouse, Bart, and Lisa are now the outcasts. Running for their life, you know, kill the dorks, bash their butts, kick their shins.
Kill the dorks.
Right out of Rambo, Nelson goes to paint up the hunt is on. Excellent. And to wrap up our little B story here, we cut back to Evergreen Terrace. I've heard this quoted a lot. I don't know whether it was just, do you remember, did you ever go on like the official Simpsons website? And it was all interactive. You could look at like character bios, play with soundboards and that.
I don't know if I did.
Ah, because I think on certain loading screens, you'd hear this little voice message, this little bit of dialogue that Homer says, oh, they've got the internet and computers now. Like, he's forever out of his element here. Zero fucking clue here. But clearly, he's got that much of a success, even though he's like those scumbags that just like trademark stuff for a living. Eventually, you know, one in every 10 trademarks, you're bound to like sell it for $1 million. And this is what's happening here with the guest, well, not even the guest, but the person that comes through the front door, Meg. Who's he got as the highest bidder?
Da-da-da, the one and only Bill Gates.
Now, what do you know of Bill Gates? Because I know a hell of a lot more now than I did when I was a kid and first watched this. He's not that good of a guy, folks. He's not that unassuming and nerdy looking. Look up like what a foundation is and the tax exempt. And look up like him funding fucking prisons and everything else. He's a murky, murky billionaire like the rest of them. So enough of me and my soapbox. What do you know of Bill Gates then, Meg?
Yeah, not much. I mean, I know he's like the computer guy.
Yeah, he is Mr. Microsoft there, former billionaire of the world. I've got a feeling they did try to reach out to him, but he didn't want to do it. He was a narc who was just too busy in that. So they've got, it sounds like Azaria doing it. I believe this is Hank Azaria doing it. I love Homer's little digs. Oh, get a look at the bull job, Marge, on his shit trim. Good. He fucking deserves it there. So instead of competing with Homer, he wants to buy him out. And they're going to live like rich kings, Marge. So he reluctantly accepts this offer, and they buy him out, don't they, Meg?
Oh, they buy him out, and it's very sad. Classic evil billionaire moves, I think.
Oh, they have the internet on computers now.
Homer, Bill Gates is here.
Bill Gates? Billionaire computer nerd Bill Gates? Oh my god, oh my god! Get out of sight, Marge! I don't want this to look like a two-bit operation!
Mr. Simpson?
You don't look so rich.
Don't let the haircut fool you. I'm exceedingly wealthy.
Get a load of the ball job, Marge.
Your internet ad was brought to my attention, but I can't figure out what, if anything, Compia Global HyperMeganet does. So rather than risk competing with you, I've decided simply to buy you out.
This is it, Marge. I poured my heart and soul into this business, and now it's finally paying off. We're rich, richer than astronauts.
Homer, quiet. You'll queer the deal.
Oh, I reluctantly accept your proposal.
Well, everyone always does. Buy him out, boys!
Hey, what the hell's going on?
Oh, I didn't get rich by writing a lot of checks.
It really is with them muscular nerds. They end up breaking pencils. I forgot to mention this. He chucks the stationary butter on the floor to write a delicious memo with. That's gone.
Yep.
I noticed in one of the scenes with all his desk toys and that, he's got, do you remember, I don't know if it was a 90s thing or it goes past that, but do you remember the little like self-contained needles in like a plastic square and you could mold your face or mold your hand with?
Yeah, my parents-in-law have still got one in their house.
Oh, no way. Yeah. Oh, they were the shit. They were brilliant. They're up there with the little shitty electric static balls that you put and then it's like you get electrocuted. It's up there with them. But yeah, Homer's done a little mold of his face. If you go back and rewatch one of these scenes with him in, you get a little Homer mold in his little needle print there. It's really cute.
Oh, I never noticed that. I'm going to have to watch it again and look out for it.
Unfortunately, CompuGlobal Hypernet is no more. Hopefully, Lisa, Bart and Milhouse are, though, as we cut back to them as they're running away. And again, Milhouse being the absolute beta male that he is. Oh, you think it's going to be the heroic sacrifice. Oh, I can't go on. You know, go on without me and take me with you. Oh, man, come on. Like, this is a big, sweaty, crumpled mess on the floor.
They try to run off, and then they vine swing across Milhouse, and I believe, according to the production notes, a little reference to Raiders of the Lost Ark. You know, there's no time when that fella betrays Indy, when he's trying to get the little golden monkey. Milhouse just fucks off Lisa and Bart there, but then this kind of took me out, I can't lie. Bart, and Meg will appreciate this, with the strength of the full Wales rugby team, pushes down a tree, and they hop over the top of it there. And I know this is, you know, we'll get to the ending, but it's just animated and all that. But I don't know, just that bit kind of took me out of it, Meg, there. If that's just me having a little moan about an animated show. But did that take you out of it, or is it just, you know, hey, it is what it is?
You know what? It definitely did this time around. It just felt a little bit like...
Oh, okay.
Oh. Do not remember being concerned about that at all when I was watching this when I was younger. Yeah, this time around, it definitely did just feel a little bit like, huh.
Oh, forgot to mention as well, the other kids have gone full savage as well there, you know, chanting the like, and they're all in, you know, killing garb and face paint, and it'll be the last time we mention him, our MVP, but how's Ralphie painted up?
Oh my god, Ralphie's painted up like a cat.
He is, he just thinks this is like a birthday party, I think he's got, again, like Homer, no idea what's going on, but he's going along with the crowd.
This is just such a good episode for Ralph.
It is, it's just dress up for him as they continue to chase them down. The innocent ones hide in a cave. Oh, it's fine, we'll be safe in here. They're in the cave, I can hear them. And great delivery by Yardley Smith, by Lisa. Oh, figs.
Yep.
Like, that's...
Good choice of word as well, because I think they were trying to be risque with the sensors and that, but just great delivery on it there. They're looking down a barrel of a gun, so to speak, here with the savages now, Meg. Lisa's got literally got something in her back pocket. The Model UN Charter. Now, does this stop the savages, or is this the untimely end of Milhouse, as he said before?
Well, I think something else puts a stop to it.
It does. The kids seemingly seem... like, startled with something, and Lisa thinks she's got them with, like, union trade laws, actual UN charter. Like, oh yes, the UN looks down upon, you know, that, and cruel and unusual punishment. But, oh no, it's the monster. The monster is real, folks. It's a big boar, as it chased them out there, scaring the kids away. And it's got a little crisp packet in its tusk. And it turns out that the monster has been eating their food. It's nothing but a run-of-the-mill boar. Nelson, you know what? It's him or Ralph that's my MVP there. He's had some stellar lines. And being the bully's thriving in this situation here. But he just goes, oh, sorry for the whole trying to kill you thing. And then, to rub salt in the wounds, Milhouse, like, oh, you got any more you want to admit to? Like... fuck me. Just two sandwiches as well, Meg, and a bag of Doritos. What a bastard.
That's all. Just two sandwiches and a bag of Doritos.
Oh, lies on top of lies. What a bastard. But it turns out they can live forever. You know, they've got a renewable food source. It's slime, Meg. It's slime, Lisa points out. And there's enough slime for everyone. Do the kids go along with this new veggie lifestyle and this comfortable life on the island?
They absolutely do not, and they do what I think was the smart decision and decide to eat the boar instead.
Big smash cut to a roast to a roast boar as well, just on the spit roast. It's brilliant there. Martin's eating snout as well. Like, oh, Christ, I couldn't imagine that. Like, I'm sure you can. I know many cultures where they eat everything rooted to pig feet and everything else there, but oh, I couldn't do nose there. Now, I'll ask this, speak pork products, Meg. I'll ask you this as one friend to another, and it'll be a litmus test for our friendship there.
Oh, no.
Do you enjoy, speaking of weird food stuff, do you like black pudding?
I love black pudding. It's
yes!
One of my favourite yes! things to eat.
Yes, one for the good guys, folks. Here we go. All right, brilliant. I was going to say, talk about weird food stuff there. Oh, fantastic. Love you even more, Meg. With breakfast or in a little, like, I don't know, would you cook it with potatoes? How are you doing it there? Because I've had both, and I've had it with, like, haggis. It's stunning.
Yes, I guess I usually have it for breakfast, but honestly, like, I'm the only one at home that'll eat it. So usually you buy a packet, you have two slices of breakfast, and then a couple of days later it's like, what should I have for lunch? And it's just like, I'll have black pudding and toast. Delicious.
Oh, you've had it on toast. I've never thought of that.
Yeah, man, right. I fucking love the stuff. Like, when I was in Scotland as well, I got to have, they were serving haggis with breakfast every morning, and that's fucking delicious as well. Like, I should move to Scotland.
And we get an end. We get James Earl Jones as a guest voice in this, surprisingly.
And eventually, they were rescued by, let's say, Mo.
Now, with this here ending, Meg, I've seen this with a lot of Simpsons fandom, and I kind of believe it as well, but from this episode, and from, season 9 onwards, the crew, the production team, start to do these screwy endings as just a way to wrap things up, because, and it's understandable, you do 8-9 years of a television program, you're going to run out of ideas, you're going to run out of satisfying ways to end episodes. So, and I don't mind this because it's kind of jokey, you know, they've gotten this big Hollywood actor to do this dramatic read for the dramatic ending there, so I don't mind that. But they continue to do it, Meg, and season 11, I think I spoke about this with other people on the pod, they get really egregious. They run this well dry round about season 11 there, and it gets like piss takey. So I thought I'll just inform y'all about this there. But with that being said, Meg, could I have your final thoughts on this here episode, and could I have your own unique rating out of 5, just in case you can't remember? For example, if I were to grade this, I could say, I give this 2 out of 5, you know, pig snouts or imaginary monsters out of 5, something like that.
Okay, so I love the episode as a whole. There are a couple of odd moments that I think could have been done better or could have been left out. But ultimately, it's definitely in my top 10. It's probably in my top 5.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think I would give it 4.2 Chewy Chewy Cocoa Beans.
Oh, perfect. Very nice. What way to cap it?
All right, for myself there, for season 9, and for, again, because people hate the ending here, but as overall story, and the B story as well is quite solid, I'd say this is a really good effort. You could argue it's just out of or just inside the, quote, golden era there, but as far as a story, it's quite neat. I like seeing the kids get up to adventures. I think season 9, they've also got where they've got kids' news coming up as well. And that's a whole kid's storyline as well. It's really cool seeing them interact. And again, it's a real-life thing, you know. I think it's a really great sender for Lord of the Flies. I think they do an excellent job, as you could do for, you know, like a PG-rated animated show. I think they've done the best they could with it there. Again, Milhouse is the big detractor of this. I think they could have had 2 more scenes on the Homer B-plot. I just wanted to see him, like, deal with, you know, being an internet company or, you know, trying to set up, I don't know, like an eBay account or something. I wanted a bit more comedy from it. I wanted a few more scenes from it, but that's kind of me being a bit greedy. So overall, I would give this a 3.5 out of 5. Oh, let's say Moe's.
There we go. Let's be lazy. There we go.
Love it.
come to Uncle Mo's for family fun. It's good, 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 good.
Ooh, sounds good.